Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is a professional storyteller and teaches at Florida Atlantic University. Hi, Karen.
Hey, Michael.
What story do you have today?
Michael, here's a story from Kathy Comer.
And it all began when I was about 40 years old as a single mom of twin children who were about 10 months old, and I went in for a mammogram. This started out as just a routine mammogram that I needed to go into, but it became larger and larger. It started out with the first visit of being called back for the fact that it was a little bit suspicious and a little bit bigger than they would like to see on the mammogram, and then after going back for more images and biopsies, I was called back again to be told that it was something that was going to need to be taken out and further investigated. So rapidly prepared to have surgery, went in for my surgery, and then what was bad news became really bad news because I was told that this was somewhat aggressive and I would need to start with chemotherapy and possibly radiation down the pike. And the most frightening part of it was being told that the survival rate at that point in time for a situation like mine was about 10 years. And so that prognosis was not particularly good for a single mother of twin 10-month-olds. And it resulted in basically a 24-hour time of chaos where I went through every single emotion, probably defined by the stages of grieving that you can go through and try and figure out what's up. Having a scientific background myself, you know, I tend to rely on logic and thinking about what they're saying, but there really was no hope in what I was being told, that best case was I would go through these treatments and there still wasn't very much time to be raising my children, which then initiated a whole nother set of thoughts about how to be the best mother that I could be by providing for them. And one of the things I quickly realized was that children who are infants and, you know, around 1 year of age are going to be adopted by much better families and be in a much better circumstance in their life than children who maybe had to be watching their mother deteriorate over a number of years, and then when they were in elementary school at some point be put up for adoption. This was a very tense situation and very emotional, and it's only been very recently that I've burst out in complete tears every time I think about it. But I did come to a peace within that 24-hour period that I knew that my faith was strong enough that God didn't intend this to be the plan. I hadn't made it through all the things I made in my life and all the problems I had even conceiving my children to go through all of that only to give up and throw my hands up and say, you know, okay, I can't do this. So I knew that I couldn't put them up for adoption and that I would survive and that it was just a matter of executing on both the doctor's orders and my faith as well. It also provided a scientific conundrum because if I put my children up for adoption, I felt that there was absolutely no way I could live because who would want to live after they did that? So it would take away my hope for that. So I moved forward and I did my 6 months of chemotherapy, and I also reached out to all of my friends and even took it further than I had ever been before. Taken it before in the professional world where speaking about your faith and your belief system is completely taboo, and spoke to my colleagues about what I was going through. And everybody, of course, was quite supportive and asked what they could do. And my only answer was, pray for me. There was nothing that anybody could do for me besides that because there was no science, no money, no amount of anything anybody could do for me except for a miracle. So they prayed and I went to my chemo and it was a tough haul. I tried to keep things as normal as I could, dropping my kids off and picking them up at daycare every day through thick and thin, which often resulted in, you know, just getting sick to my stomach in the car while I was going there. But I tried to do that as best I could every day to keep normalcy going on. And then we got to, after my last chemotherapy treatment, 6 months later, I went into an appointment for my oncologist, and she started out the session with, hey, I've got good news and I've got bad news. And the first thing she said was, the good news is you don't need radiation. The tumor board has evaluated your situation, and they've decided you need no further treatment at all in this. You don't need radiation, and you know everything's fine, and you just go about your life. The bad news is you never had the tumor that we thought you had. It was actually something that was quite benign and not going to cause you much problem. We probably would have given you minimal interventions from the start, and it was just a misread of your pathology on the tumor, so you don't have to worry about that anymore. So that was truly good news, and it was bad news. And as much as I started out happy that, you know, yes, I wouldn't have to continue to walk this path anymore, but there is some regret that I had given up 6 months of my life to follow doctor's orders, because when you have cancer, you're not necessarily feeling sick. It's the chemo that makes you sick. Though I've been questioned sometimes why I wouldn't take action against the doctors in the hospital, there were two things that came into play. One reason it has to do with our legal system, which is unless you have damages, you are not able to sue somebody. And I did talk to a couple of attorneys, and both of them advised me that I would have been better off had I died because of not getting treatment. Because I did get treatment, we looked at the fact that I had not lost my job, so I continued to have income. My expenses were not greatly increased because I had fabulous insurance. And when it comes to pain and suffering, there was nothing I could really document except that I didn't feel very well. And the way our legal system works is attorneys take these types of cases on for a percentage of their winnings, and since my winnings were so minuscule, nobody was going to take that. One of the things that I do believe is that truly it was a miracle of God, and that would be against my own belief system to go in and say that I had to blame somebody else for that. Nonetheless, I do feel overall that was the best thing that could happen, and I feel that my faith is that much stronger. But I would like to add, certainly they had to tell me in the doctor's office that I didn't need any more treatment, and they had to give me some medical explanation for why. But notably, I continued to go to the oncologist just for checkups. I sometimes wondered why, but kind of I think the wind down was I had to go back in 3 months, then I had to go back in 6 months, then I had to go back in a year. By the time I got to the second year, after I had been told that I didn't have what they thought I had originally, my oncologist said to me, I just wanted to say to you, Kathy, that you handled that news more gracefully than I could have ever imagined anybody handled it. As I walked out, I noted that the statute of limitations on any legal suit had run out, and I never went back.
Kathy Comer with a story about a miracle cure.
Or not. It could be a terrible medical mistake. It could be a miracle cure. And that's one of the reasons I love this story so much. If you're not a person of faith, you may see this as just a horrifying example of malpractice.
Well, I do find it rather disturbing myself. And I'm glad that Kathy's okay with it, but I'm still disturbed.
It is a good reminder to us of a lot of things, certainly, of getting second and third opinions, for one thing. But I think her faith saw her through this. Even if she 100% believed it was medical malpractice, her faith would have seen her through it and led her to believe, well, good things came out of this anyway, and things happen in life, and we deal with them. And talk about making lemonade from lemons. Here she gets this beautiful story and this beautiful feeling from her life that God intervened.
Well, I'm grateful that Kathy shared this story because, like you say, we should all get second opinions.
And maybe having faith makes people a little more sanguine about the difficult things that happen to them. She's telling how she felt, and she's telling how she overcame what could have been tremendous, tremendous fury and misery.
Letting go the diagnosis, having to make a decision whether to keep your children, knowing that you're not going to be able to see them grow up or give them up for adoption. She made, obviously, the right decision, but to consider that is just crazy.
That's what gives the story so many layers to it, so many levels to it. How many of us think about things like that, ever have to really think about what matters in life and what you would do in such and such a situation. I mean, when I was growing up, there was a game called Ethics, and they'd give you these situations like this, and you'd have to answer them. And it was a ridiculous game, because how could you really put yourself in these shoes? And she was in this situation, and thank heaven, or thank God, or thank whatever, she came out of this perfectly fine. But she was confronted with some really difficult truths. And I'd like to think it made her a better person, a more thoughtful person, a better person.
I think we all grew up just listening to the story.
I particularly found it interesting that she is a scientist, that Kathy came to this story having a sensitivity to what doctors are going through, and how even scientists, for all of their care that they take in their work, they're human. They are human, and they have challenges, and she recognized that. And I think it's possible that a non-scientist in this situation would have said, they're supposed to have all the answers. You know, they're supposed to know. Well, everybody's doing the best we can.
Well, thanks for bringing that story in, Karen. If our listeners have a South Florida story they would like to share, how can they get in touch with you?
Send an email to cneil, that's C-N as in Nancy, E-I-L-E, at fau.edu.
Our website has contact information as well as archived stories at wlrn.org. Click radio and the public storyteller. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Michael. See you next week.
Dr. Karen Neal is a professional storyteller and teaches at Florida Atlantic University. My name is Michael Stock. The Public Storyteller returns next Sunday.